Willie and D-Mace on ESPN 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick this week. Derek Mason is here. Nick Frazier is here. It's a beautiful Monday in Nashville, Tennessee. I hope everybody had a wonderful weekend. We had Titans football over the weekend, thankfully.
Finally.
A preseason win, a 17-13 preseason win against the San Francisco 49ers on Saturday. We will talk plenty about that game because it's great to actually have a football game to talk about and break down. We will be spending plenty of the show discussing that. We will have Teron Davenport at 1 o'clock getting TD's reaction to the Titans' performance in their preseason opener against the 49ers. But how was everybody's weekend? Derek, Nick?
Hey, mine was good. It was slow.
Always good to have a slow weekend.
Exactly. The weather was beautiful. Spent some time outside. So it turned out to be pretty good, man. Got a chance to see the Titans as everyone was anticipating on that game Saturday. For some reason, I thought it started at 7:30. Don't all, haven't their last few preseasons started late, like 7:30, somewhere around there?
I will tell you something, Derek, and I mean this with all honesty and all respect to the Tennessee Titans. I'm glad I could watch football. Uh-huh. I don't think I can concern myself with the start times of previous Tennessee Titans preseason games. All I know is that the one on Saturday started at 6.
Yeah.
So that's all I know.
Because I almost, the reason I bring it up is because I was watching some recaps of the Olympics because I thought it started at 7:30. And luckily, I just chose to flick over, just kind of see what else was on. And it was the start of the – they were previewing the game. So I was able to catch everything. But it turned out to be a really good, really good game considering it was preseason. But I'm sure – listen, we're going to talk about football all day today. And the Titans are what we, feel they did this weekend and how well they did. And we will critique some guys. But basketball this weekend, men and women's.
Captivating television.
Oh, my goodness. If and I know a lot of people, especially here in the Nashville area, because we don't have a team here in Nashville and the closest one is in Memphis. And unless the Grizzlies are one of the best teams in basketball, nobody's really in this area really paying attention to them. But if you didn't appreciate what was happening Saturday in regards to the Olympic basketball, then you're not a sports enthusiast because both of those games were just like nail biters.
Fabulous game. The men defeated France on Saturday, 98-87. The story of that game was Steph Curry. Made 4 3-pointers in the final, like, 3-ish minutes of the game. The degree of difficulty seemed to increase with each one, including that last one. The behind-the-back dribble, heave over a double team, right into the net. And watching that, I was like, I think it was Dwayne Wade who was doing color on the game. He just went, oh! And I did that in my living room. And Bam Adebayo, who was a center on the team, had the perfect reaction to that shot specifically. And I quote, I was kind of like, what the F? Then I remembered who was shooting it. Because that's how I kind of felt as I was watching. It's like, no way. Absolutely no way. And nothing. Well, I don't know if it was a perfect swish, but it definitely didn't rattle around the rim. It went right through the hole. Steph Curry, 60 points over the final two games in the Olympics. The semifinal against Serbia, the comeback win, and the gold medal win against France. 60 points over the final two games. And if I'm not mistaken, the most points over a two-game span by any U.S. Olympic men's basketball player in history.
Yeah, and rightfully so. It would be bestowed upon the greatest shooter that we've ever seen. I've watched basketball for a very long time, going back to the early 80s. And I thought Reggie Miller was a hell of a shooter. You can go down the line, Ray Allen, guys like that. But, man, what Steph can do with the basketball as far as putting it in the basket, I don't think I've seen anyone that can do it and make it seem so easy. The way he does it makes it seem so easy. So, and then they should – you know what? Because what I've noticed that in other sports, in the Olympics, like if you're, doing your floor routine, whether you're diving or synchronized swimming, or they don't call it synchronized swimming anymore. They call it something else, artistic synchronized swimming, I believe. They all get points for degree of difficulty, right?
Yes.
They all get points for degree of difficulty. Steph should have got a point and a half for degree of difficulty.
It should have been a 4.5 point shot instead of a 3-point shot.
But he should have got a medal plus.
He shot, and I'm not, and it's an amazing number once I have it written out. Over the final two games of the Olympics, so the semifinal game against Serbia and the gold medal game against France, Steph Curry shot 17 of 26 from three-point range. That's 65.4%. Absolutely unconscious, I should say. So congratulations to the men. On Sunday, the women, also facing France, won in a nail-biter 67-66. Gabby Williams of France, I believe a former UConn standout. I believe her mother is a French citizen, that hence why she was playing for France, hit a buzzer beater, but it was only a two. So it ended up being, they ended up falling, France did, 1 point short of at least sending that game to overtime. But the women, you want to talk about dynasties. 8 consecutive gold medals for the U.S. women's basketball program. 61 consecutive wins. And I believe this was only the third of that, of those 61 that was decided by single digits. So France gave them an incredible game. It looks like, I mean, who would have thought that France would have been the team? Like, French basketball is on the rise. You know, the men have faced France in each of the past two gold medal games, and we're 4 years away from the next Olympics in Los Angeles. I'd be willing to bet you're going to see it again, USA versus France in the gold medal game. There were 4 Frenchmen who were drafted in the first round of the NBA draft this past summer, this past June, I should say, this summer, including the top 2 picks. So they're going to reload.
Yeah.
France is going to be even better next go around in the Olympics. So, you know, who would have thought that France would be the next great rival for the U.S. men, at least, and potentially the women. But the number for that game, the ratings, this is from Richard Deitch, friend of the show. The U.S. men's basketball team's win over France averaged 19.5 million viewers on NBC and Peacock, the most watched gold medal game since the 1996 Atlanta Olympics. The game peaked at 22.7 million viewers from 5 to 5:15 p.m. Eastern time. So people were tuned in. They got a fabulous show from Steph Curry. I think one of the funnier things I saw in the fallout of that was the official Twitter/X account of McDonald's France teased that they were going to discontinue their curry dipping sauce. As a result, they just had a post of the sauce in French. It translated to English. The post said, "For obvious reasons, we are considering removing this sauce for 4 years minimum." So Steph Curry ruined curry dipping sauce for all French people who enjoy McDonald's. But absolutely fabulous basketball. You know, it was captivating television. Quickly, before we head to break, we also have some breaking news in the college football world. The first AP Top 25 poll has been released. Georgia, number one on that list. I don't think anyone is shocked by that.
I don't think anybody's shocked by that.
46 first-place votes for Georgia. The top 10, quickly, Georgia, Ohio State, Oregon, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss, Notre Dame, Penn State, Michigan, and Florida State. So that's your top 10. I know people are waiting to hear where Tennessee is. Tennessee is 15th in the AP preseason top 25. So definitely some SEC representation. I have to remember that Texas is now in the SEC as well. So Georgia, Texas, Alabama, Ole Miss right off the top in the top 10. Missouri number 11. And Tennessee number 15, LSU number 13.
If you look at that list, because I saw that same list, but I think another outlet posted it. And if you look at the top 12 schools at the playoffs, because they're going to take, you figure, if you're a top 12 team, more than likely, you've either won your conference or you come in second in your conference. And we're talking about the Power Five. Or 4.5, or 4.
Whatever it is these days.
Because I don't know what the Pac-12 is. I have no idea what they are.
It's barely hanging
it's
on for dear life.
It's a
Pac-2.
It's barely a Pac.
But you look at the top 12, they are represented by either the SEC or the Big Ten.
Minus Notre Dame.
Minus Notre Dame.
Yes.
So we will have, we would have, in theory, if you pick the top 12 teams, we would have an SEC versus the Big Ten. That's basically what it would be.
Yeah,
with
probably.
The exception of a few teams here and there.
I should also add that Florida State,
yeah,
also in the top 10. So of the top 12, to your point, 10 of the 12 mm-hmm. represent the SEC or the Big Ten, according to my very quick scrolling of this. The others that aren't, as I mentioned, Notre Dame at 7, Florida State at 10, Tennessee at number 15, Oklahoma at 16, Texas A&M at 20, and that's it in terms of representation from the SEC.
Hmm. Well, we'll see. They got to play the games first, but yes. Again, I'm sure once the season ends, the SEC and the Big Ten will represent more of the field than any other conference out there. So, because it's basically been like that for the last couple of years anyway.
We have a texter who suggests, to your point, Derek, about getting skills points for what Steph Curry did. Why not a three-point and slam dunk contest for medals?
Hmm.
Did you see the breakdancing over the weekend?
I loved it. Okay. I loved it breakdancing, man. I wanted to get out my cardboard, even though they don't use cardboard no more.
Ray gun.
I wanted to get out my cardboard and breakdance some more, but then I figured I'm 50 years old. I can't breakdance anymore, man. My knees ain't like they used to be.
It was, still got it.
It was Ray Gun was her name, who represented Australia. She was a viral.
So who ended up winning sensation. A gold medal in that?
I have no idea.
Yeah, me
great question.
I watched it a little. I watched it up until like the medal round. I don't know why I didn't watch it in the medal round, but I watched it all the way up until the medal round. But I didn't see who won the gold or silver or bronze.
All I know is that my wife was sending me memes of Ray Gun breakdancing with all of these funny things. It was just a constant stream of memes she was finding on Twitter. I was like, are you actually doing work today, or are you just sending me these memes? They were very funny. I don't know if breaking will survive to the next Olympics, but it would, it, you know, who knows?
They're going to try to keep it. They're going to, huh?
I would say the gold medal placing for the women's was Japan, Lithuania, and then China. And then for the men, it was Canada, France, and the United States.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we got to up our game.
Yeah.
We got to up our breaking game. And in the future, they're adding 5 new sports to the Olympics. I saw that this morning.
I believe lacrosse.
Baseball
and softball.
Baseball and softball.
They're not new sports, but they were not compete. There was no baseball or softball this time around.
Okay. Flag football.
Flag football.
Flag football.
And then it was squash.
Squash. Yes.
Squash is
really?
The fifth one. Yeah.
Yes.
Squash is the fifth one.
Wow.
Not the stuff you eat.
No, not the stuff you eat. But
tough for me, D-Mace, I know.
The best part of the Olympics for me, uh-huh. and both versions of the Olympics, the summer and the winter, is watching sports and becoming invested in sports that I, under no other circumstances, would become invested in, except during the Olympics. Like, I loved watching water polo mm-hmm. during the Olympics, and they're nasty. Like, it's kind of like, what's the, like, the sort of like the analogy of the duck, right? On the surface, it's calm, and uh-huh. underneath the water, they're paddling very fast. Like, I feel like NBC would have shots like under the water, and these people are kicking the crap out of each other underneath the water in water polo.
It's a mean sport.
It is a mean sport.
They're grabbing, pulling each other. I'm surprised they don't come out there with a bunch of scratches, man.
No. And the ability to tread water mm-hmm. on top of just being pummeled over and over and over again.
I'd have drowned a long time ago.
I almost did that Friday. My buddy invited me out to the lake.
To play water polo?
No, just hang out at the lake. And he goes, hey, try wakeboarding. I was like, I've never tried wakeboarding before. I was like, we'll do it. Why not? In the middle of the lake. It's probably about 50 feet deep, you know, maybe 60, whatever it may be. I put on the little board on my feet. All of a sudden, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm drifting away from the boat. I don't have a rope. I started panicking. I was like, hey, Luke, give me the rope, please. And then, sure enough, my head started going to water. White caps started hitting my face. I'm just drinking the water.
Oh,
I'm like, man, I'm hurting over here. I need some help. I started drowning. I was like, give me something to hold on to.
Oh, man.
See? So let's just say I didn't try wakeboarding.
So this is from Forbes. Flag football and squash have been approved as first-time additions in Los Angeles, which is hosting the Olympics in 2028, while baseball, softball, lacrosse, and cricket will be added after various lengths of absence. Lacrosse has not been an Olympic sport since 1908. Mm-hmm. Cricket was contested once in Paris in 1900. Breakdancing and perhaps boxing will be out, formerly optional sports, skateboarding, sport climbing, and surfing will transition to permanent events in 2028.
I'm gonna put together a flag football team. I wonder what are the requirements for a flag football team. Could you not, which I did play in the NFL, can I not put together a flag football team?
I feel like it should be like the big three, you know, that 3-on-3 basketball tournament that Ice Cube put together. It should be like, hey, man, as long as you're not an active player, I think you should be eligible.
Yeah, you're
right. I think you need to look into it.
I do.
I honestly would love to see you win a gold medal.
At 55, man. That'd be awesome. Woo! Well, 54 and a half. Man, I still be able to do it.
We have one texter who says, trust me, D-Mace, after Ray Gunn's performance, you would have been the Olympic record holder. Just put on some electric boogaloo and we'll see what happens. But 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. As I mentioned, as we all know, there was a football game. On Saturday, the Titans defeated the 49ers 17-13 at Nissan Stadium to open the preseason. We're going to get all into that, but we're going to start with our initial reactions to the game. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick this week. Derek Mason, 1025, 1063, the game.
When I talked to Jaquan after the game yesterday, he was kind of so happy for Kiaris and what Kiaris had shown on kickoff. I'm curious as a head coach how you nurture a culture where guys celebrate their teammates making a play in camp when they're fighting for the same jobs and same opportunities to have themselves stick out.
Well, I think because you got the right makeup of people. You know, that's the first part. I mean, I think these guys genuinely do care about each other, and I think that as a head coach is the kind of culture you want, where they do root for each other's success. You know, they're even though they are competing, they are genuinely happy for guys when they play well. And I think you saw one of the things I thought last night was really cool is I thought our sideline energy was outstanding, and I thought guys excited for their teammates making plays. And one of the things I mentioned before the game to our team was that, you know, we talk about, you guys have heard it before, but, you know, we talk about hunting together. And that was the first time we'd had a chance to do that. And as a team against somebody else. And I thought they did a great job of rooting and encouraging and picking up and being excited for all the things that went on in the game. And they're all competing for jobs, but just to see that type of camaraderie, that kind of connection amongst our team was really cool to see. And I think that when you have the right guys and they approach their job the right way, they can separate the competition from wanting to see other people do well. And I think that's a sign of a team that's got a pretty good connection and really is, you know, building each other up and building a positive place to come to work. So I think it's a positive sign for me as a head coach.
That was Brian Callahan, Tennessee Titans head coach, after the Titans 17-13 win against the San Francisco 49ers in the preseason on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. Adam Vingan in for Willie, Derek Mason here, and as well as Nick Frazier. We're going to break down specific units throughout the course of the show. We'll talk about Will Levis and the first team offense. We'll talk about the defense. We'll talk about the special teams. So we'll get into those units more specifically. But Derek, what was your overall reaction to the Titans' performance on Saturday? And this is something that always fascinates me. Everybody watches different things when they're evaluating a team, whether it's at practice or in this case, a preseason game. As a former player, when you're watching this game to see how things are going in terms of a team building, players trying to make the team stand out, do all of those things, what are the things that you key in on, and how did the players and the team perform in those areas?
First, I just like anybody, you're watching the offensive line. I think the offensive line drew the eye of everybody, even the guys on the team. I'm sure it did, at least for the first couple of snaps, because that was their Achilles heel last year, the offensive line. They couldn't get a snap damn near. They couldn't get momentum up the field in the run game at times. Damn sure couldn't pass the ball a lot of times or have time to pass the ball. So everyone's eyes were on the offensive line. And I think for the most part, I think they did a good job. You know, they got some penetration, you know, a few plays here and there. But for the most part, I thought the Tennessee Titans did some of the things. They kept it vanilla. They did some of the things that they wanted to do. You saw a little bit of it in the run game. I call it the S&P report right now. Spears and Pollock, that's what I'm going to coin, that tandem in the backfield. They both ran really well. The offensive line gave them a ton of room to run at times, even on that right side of the field. And that's been sort of the question mark for this team. I think we trust the left side somewhat, but it was the right side that everyone wanted to see. And they were able to get some pretty good runs early on in that right side when the first unit was in there. So
Tony Pollard's big run came off the right side.
Yeah, so it was good to see that. It was good to see Will Levis go through his progressions.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't seem rushed. He got some time to throw the ball. It was good to see the two starting receivers, Ridley and Treylon Burks, catch a pass. But I think both of them caught one.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a good first impression for that offensive line in that first unit. It wasn't perfect now, but compared to what we have seen over the years and what our anticipation was, I think if you're grading this team, I think they were about a C+, because they didn't do anything. They were vanilla at what they did. So it wasn't like they were trying to do some elaborate things. It was just basically 26, 27 power, basically, and we're going to throw some outs here and there. But I think they did a good job at just working the simple things. And Will did exactly what Coach Callahan wanted to do. You don't go broke taking a profit, and that's what he did majority of the times.
You know what they say, C's get degrees. So yeah. C+, pass, fail. I think the offensive line passed in that regard. So the projected starting offensive line, J.C. Latham, Peter Skoronski, Lloyd Cushenberry, Nicholas Petit-Frere, and Dylan Radins, each played 14 snaps. So that's all the work they got. You know, that the first team offense was on the field for two drives. You know, that first drive was short because Kyaris Jackson had a 63-yard return, and we'll get into the special teams as well, aided by a 15-yard penalty. So they started in the red zone, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. So they didn't have it was a shorter drive. Now it's great that they got into the end zone. At the end of the day, the first team offense can say it scored two touchdowns on its two drives in the preseason, and that's a confidence builder. But to your point about the offensive line, yeah, I thought they did their job. You know, we'll definitely talk about the play where Will Levis was trucked after taking off. But I thought, you know, the one thing about that play, I thought his protection on that play was really good.
Yeah.
And I thought for the most part, the offensive line did a good job of protecting Will Levis. Now, of course, there's the obvious caveat that the San Francisco 49ers were not playing their starters, mm-hmm. that when the regular season starts, that offensive line is going to face a higher caliber of player on the other side. So you always have to take the preseason in that respect with a grain of salt. But to your point, Derek, the fact that the offensive line, despite facing lower competition, so to speak, on the other side of the ball, held up their end of the bargain. Mm-hmm. And that's a good thing. If they were giving up sacks or getting beat by the defenders on the other side, then you would have some concerns. Mm-hmm. But the fact that they did their job and did it well enough in limited work, I feel like is a positive step as we prepare for the regular season.
Yeah, it was. And listen, there were some other notable players that did a good job yesterday. You're talking about the Jackson. I call him the Jackson 2 instead of the Jackson 5. They did a wonderful job.
Kyaris Jackson
and
Jaquan Jackson.
Yes.
So both of them had a really good return. Chance Campbell. Didn't he have a fun? He had a nice hit.
He had a big game, Chance Campbell.
Big hit on kickoff return. He had an amazing game.
Nine tackles, five solo, one sack, one tackle for loss, one pass defended, one quarterback hit for Chance Campbell.
Didn't he get an interception at the end? I thought he got intercepted at the end, yeah.
I think he did, right?
Yeah, he got an interception at the end. He had the trifecta Saturday. So
yes, he did have an interception at the end.
Yeah, so you're starting to see this is what I think we want to see moving forward. Now, they got Seattle coming in, so you know, a lot of what they want to do will be during the practice, the joint practices. What you see in the game is going to be more so the backups, the second unit guys, because there's no need for the first unit guys to play because they're going to be practicing against them for 2 days. But what I think we started to see a glimpse of what this team sort of can be from a depth standpoint. Again, you look at Chance Campbell and what he did. Brownlee on defense, what he was doing. That front seven. Now, granted, they didn't have Jeffrey Simmons, but I thought at times they played well. They were aggressive with the linebackers. You can see the personality of Denard Wilson come out very quickly. This is going to be an aggressive, fast-moving, disciplined team. But you got to understand, when you're doing this early on, there may be some big plays made because of the aggressiveness. Yesterday, I mean, Saturday, they played a lot of vanilla coverage. It was a lot of cover three off coverage, and they were able to run in, you know, outs, curls, and stuff like that, and get passes in front of the defensive backs. But make no mistake, once the season starts, what you see now is going to be times 50. Denard Wilson is going to bring pressure after pressure after pressure, but smartly. But this defense, man, even the second unit guys, were flying around. And I can't wait to see Big Jeff and Sweat out there together. That's another guy that I was impressed by. Now, it wasn't like he wowed, but I was impressed that they left him in the game on purpose to see the folks. So I think he played like five or six snaps in a row at one point. And then they end up taking him out. That's what we need to see moving forward. How many snaps can Sweat play without being removed from the game? And he did a good job as far as being in the game, you know, having somewhat of an impact. It wasn't a large impact, but
he disrupted the game.
Yeah, him
good.
Swallowing up two blockers, that's enough. If you listen to the call, Saturday, that's what they were talking about. Him swallowing up two blockers and allowing those linebackers, as I said last week, to scrape and to hit those A and B gaps without anybody in front of them. So I am going to love watching him and Big Simmons go at opposing offensive linemen.
Another interesting aspect, of course, now that Derrick Henry is no longer here, there's no bell cow to absorb all of the carries. We've been told it's going to be a running back by committee with Tony Pollard and Tajay Spears, and we saw a little bit of that. Pollard had four carries for 35 yards. We mentioned the 24-yard run to the right side. Tajay Spears had three carries, for 2 yards. He did have the short touchdown. And they also got into the receiving game as well. Tony Pollard, two receptions for 11 yards. Tajay Spears, one reception for 2 yards. So it really was alternating. It felt like it was Pollard, then Spears. And I'm sure each game is going to be a different thing. If one player is feeling it more than the other, there might be a discrepancy in the snap count. But it does really feel like it's going to be a two-headed monster, so to speak, for the Tennessee Titans in the backfield now that Derrick Henry is no longer here. I feel like that's the perfect role specifically for Tony Pollard. I felt like when he burst onto the scene with the Cowboys playing that role opposite Ezekiel Elliott, it was a bit better for him. I felt like he was more efficient than when he was the starter. Even though he did have 1,000 yards last season, he wasn't as efficient as a runner. He was coming off an injury, though. But I like the look of having Pollard and Spears back and forth. I think it brings a really intriguing element to the backfield for the Titans after so many years of, you know where the ball is going when it's in the backfield. It's not going to Derrick Henry anymore.
Well, and this is something that Titans fans got to get used to. And I'm going to say this. I think this backfield has the potential. They're not Derrick Henry. That's not what I'm
saying. Very few are.
Yeah, very few are. But I think it has the ability to be more dynamic and versatile than it's ever been. Because, again, when you have a workhorse like Derrick Henry, as great as he is, you know you're giving the ball to him, and he's running downhill. And he's going to pick up yards as the game goes on because they're going to wear people down. So he used his brute strength to be dynamic. But with these two guys, you're going to see the strength in between the tackles, and even better, you're going to see these guys be able to get outside these tackles and make moves. The touchdown that Spears had is indicative of what I believe we're going to see. He did it last year, too. Mm-hmm. Make no mistake, this ain't the first time we've seen this. This is why I wanted him to play a little bit more last year, because he gives you the element of quickness that Derrick Henry didn't have anymore. And part of it was because of the offensive line and the foot injury from two years ago, and him just getting older. He didn't have that Derrick Henry sort of quickness anymore, that jump step he used to have. Spears has it, and he has it, and he's a young guy, and you can double him with Pollard as well. So this backfield, to me, will be more dynamic in what they can do. I'm not saying they're better than Derrick Henry, but for what this team need, what they're trying to do moving forward, they need backs like this. They don't need the bruising back anymore. They need a back that can be versatile, dynamic, catch pass out the backfield, step up and block those linebackers, and those two guys can do it.
I mean, that's, of course, not – that's an element of the game that Derrick Henry, for how great he is, catching the ball out of the backfield was never his forte.
Exactly.
It didn't have to be. But it's a different element now that you have two running backs who can catch the ball and who can turn on a dime. As you mentioned, you brought it up, the Tajay Spears touchdown run. You know, how many yards out was it? Four?
4 yards.
Yeah, I mean, it was. But, you know, how many moves did he make? how many quick cuts did he make within a 3 to 4 yard span? It's something that I think is going to bring a different element to this Titans team offensively. 615-737-1025. What were your thoughts on the Titans 17-13 preseason win against the 49ers? Who stood out to you, both good and bad? We've been talking about the first team offense. Coming up next, I want to ask Derek about something I read late last week, as it relates to Will Levis and some of the company that he keeps, including a name that oftentimes, if you hear you're associated with this player, it's probably never – it's not the thing that people like. Tim Tebow. I want to get Derek's thoughts on something I read that puts Will Levis in a similar category to Tim Tebow. We'll get to that next. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick. Derek Mason, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
What do you think about the timing of the passing offense overall, and where are you guys with that?
It was good. It was good. I think there's a couple things route-wise and progression-wise with us when we could have moved on faster, or guys just making sure they understand the progression of the play and then why they need to, you know, either get to a certain depth or just make sure that they have that internal timing with their routes. So that's something we're going to continue to work on. And, you know, we got a few more weeks till we play for the real thing, and we know that we're just going to get better until then.
That was Will Levis after the Titans 17-13 preseason win against the San Francisco 49ers. Adam Vingan in for Willie Donick. Derek Mason broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. So, Derek, before the break, I mentioned to you that I wanted to get your thoughts on something that I read late last week. I think I read it over the weekend. It may have been published late last week, from Ben Solak, formerly of The Ringer, new to ESPN.com as an NFL analyst. And I said there is something I read where Will Levis is in the same class as Tim Tebow. Now, when you hear that name, people might get a visceral reaction because Tim Tebow, I mean, it's been more than 10 years since Tebow Mania, but it's still something that I feel like if when you bring it up, even now, you remember how exciting that
and
was.
And it does elicit a response. I don't know what that response is, but it elicits one.
It was like Lin's sanity, Jeremy Lin with the New York Knicks. It came quickly. We remember it, perhaps fondly. Then it disappeared as quickly as it came. But Solak writes something about Levis in terms of his pass distribution that I found to be very fascinating. So Solak writes, quote, over 21% of Levis's pass attempts last season traveled more than 20 air yards downfield. The next closest was Justin Fields at 15%. Since 2010, only 2011, Tim Tebow attempted a greater percentage of his passes downfield than Levis did last season. Solak continues, quote, simultaneously, over 25% of Levis's pass attempts were behind the line of scrimmage. So nearly half of Levis's total pass attempts were either deep shots or screens slash checkdowns. That is as polar of a pass distribution as there ever has been. Of the 486 qualifying quarterback seasons since 2010, Levis's rate of throwing 0 to 19 yards downfield is stone cold last at 59%. So nearly half of his total pass attempts after he took over were either deep shots or screens slash checkdowns. Now, friend of the station, friend of the show, Mike Herndon of PaulGaharski.com sent me the pass distribution for Will Levis. Of course, he only attempted 5 passes in the game. 1 behind the line of scrimmage, 4 were short, 0 through 9 yards for passing depth. So when you hear that, what are some ways that Brian Callahan and his offensive staff can diversify Will Levis's passing portfolio, so to speak? So it's not just going for the deep bombs or just checking it down to the running backs.
I think the more and more Will gets familiar with this offense, and not just get familiar with it, he has to know it just as well as Brian Callahan knows it. He has to. If you look at all the great quarterbacks, whether it be Manning, Brady, Breeze, you can go down the line. These guys knew their offense just as well as the head coach or the offensive coordinator. They were essentially the offensive coordinator on the field. I think that, for one, will help. I think adding the receivers that they did helps out a lot. But I think the most important thing is, and it's still sort of a question mark, even though I believe they played well in the first game, I think it's the offensive line. I think last year those numbers are indicative of a bad offensive line. It was like either we're going to max protect and throw it deep, or if we block 5-on-5, we got to get the ball away really quickly because we're not getting time to throw the ball down the field. So that's what I think and believe what was going on. When you see numbers like this, that a lot of this, half of his passes were either down the field or in that, you know, 0-9 range. That means he doesn't have enough time to throw the football. And when he does, it's max protect him. We're going downtown, post route, go route, deep comeback route, stuff like that, or deep end route. So I am going to wait and see. Again, they had a passing grade for the first game, first preseason game of the season, albeit they only played two series. But it was a passing grade. They can't get better. But I want to see this offensive line as it continues to mature in what they want to do from an offensive standpoint. I think you'll start to see once D-Hop comes back, once they start getting Treylon Burks involved into it more, you're going to see this offense start to morph into what Cincinnati was. We can hit you deep. We can hit you behind the line of scrimmage. We can hit you in between that 0 and 9. We can hit you in between that 9 and 15. This is a leveled passing attack. We're not looking to throw it down the field all the time, and we're not looking to run 1 yard shallow crosses. We are going to be able to use the whole field. And the more Will Levis knows his offense, the better he can distribute the ball to everyone. But a lot of it hinges on, as we all know, the offensive line. But they started off well, so hopefully this can continue.
One thing we know about Will Levis is that he has a bazooka for an arm. And Dan Orlovsky of ESPN posted a story today where he ranked quarterbacks in multiple categories. And Will Levis, according to Orlovsky, was number 6 in terms of arm strength among quarterbacks in the NFL. This is the company that Levis keeps, according to Orlovsky, in terms of arm strength. 1, Patrick Mahomes. 2, Josh Allen. 3, Justin Herbert. 4, Matthew Stafford. 5, Aaron Rodgers. 6, Will Levis. 7, Baker Mayfield. 8, Anthony Richardson. 9, Dak Prescott. 10, Lamar Jackson. So we know that Will Levis can throw that ball 55, 60 yards down the field. Mm-hmm. We've seen that. I think of that game against Atlanta, his debut game, a lot of deep shots in that game, if I recall correctly. Mm-hmm. But you're right. It's about diversifying where the ball is going. The offensive line is a big part of that, as you said. Another player who I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong here, as I talk to the celebrated wide receiver, I feel like Tyler Boyd specifically is going to help with that. Yeah. Having a sure-handed slot receiver, I feel like, could make a world of difference in that aspect. Am I off base there?
No, you're not, because that pass, what Tyler Boyd is able to do, one, he understands how to play the slot position. He understands where leverage is at. He understands defenses. So that will help Will out a lot. But then also you have the two guys on the outside, whether it be Ridley and Hop or Hop and Treylon or Treylon and Ridley. You have guys on the outside that they feel can flat out go get it down the field. And that's really just Treylon and Ridley. Hopkins is more of a version of what Tyler Boyd is, with a better catch radius. But it will help Will Levis because it's a shorter throw. And what they're trying to do, just like we saw early on with the catch from Calvin Ridley and the catch from Treylon Burks, catch after the run after the catch.
Yes.
That is big in this offense. I don't know. I'm not sure. The last year's offense just seemed static. Like, they were just, you know, they'd get to a spot and just sit. This offense that they're running is more of a free-flowing offense. We want to get you the ball early, get you the ball on the run, allow you to, if you do find these holes, allow you to find these holes, get the ball in your hands and get up the field very quickly. That is what this offense allows you to do. So you're going to see, even, Adam, even with the, you know, the 0 to 9 yard catches, those are going to end up a lot of times being zero. They may, you know, you may catch a 5 yard hitch or a 5 yard crossing route. It may turn into 15. You know, there's other ways to get those explosive plays down the field. We don't have to throw 109 balls or post balls. We can throw those slants, allow a Treylon Burks or a Calvin Ridley to catch it and get upfield, a Chigakonkwo, a Wiley, those guys. Or we can use Tyler Boyd and D-Hop underneath, catch it, get in those holes, and get up the field. So we're going to see a lot more movement in this offense, and we have not seen that over the last two seasons.
What did you think of the backup wide receiver battle, specifically Mason Kinsey and Kyle Phillips?
Listen, I'm just going to say this.
All right, go ahead.
I'm going to say this. If Mason Kinsey is not on this roster, I don't know what else he has to do. If he continues to play the way he has in practice, because that was my thing with Mason Kinsey over the last couple of years. You can do it in practice, but we haven't seen you really do it when the lights show up. Well, Saturday, Mason Kinsey was able to take what he did on the practice field and translate it to being on the field. This kid, all he does is catch it. He's playing with an attitude, and I like it. He's playing with a bravado, and I love it. Like, he's like, listen, this is my last opportunity probably to make this team. I'm going to go out with a bang. And he might just be, beside the big name guys, he might just be the most impressive receiver that we've seen thus far.
I think it was Paul Burmeister who called the game with Charles Davis and our friend Corey Curtis after Mason Kinsey made a catch on the broadcast. He said, death, taxes, and Mason Kinsey trying to make the Titans in August. I think that was his line. I mean, you're right. He's been, I think they said it was his fifth year, I think.
I don't, is you it know, his fifth
it's around that number.
Yeah. Like, you know, we've talked about this in other shows, those training camp stars, those players that make a big name for themselves, and it's aided by Hard Knocks. I feel like the popularity of Hard Knocks, they always follow the guy who's on the cutting
line. The bubble guy.
Right, the bubble guy, trying to make the team, the late round draft pick, the undrafted free agent. You know, he has a big game. They follow him around. He's talking to his girlfriend about practice and hopefully making the team. And, you know, either he makes the team or he doesn't, and then you probably never hear from that guy again. I feel like that's who Mason Kinsey has been over these past few years, is the guy who comes in training camp, makes big plays, gets a lot of attention during the preseason, and he's been up and down on the active roster. But you're right. I feel like it's sort of put up or shut up time for Mason Kinsey to stick on the NFL roster, the active roster. But he's trying his darndest out there, absolutely.
Yeah, and the only reason I see that he doesn't make the roster is numbers. You know, because you got the top four. We all know who those. Then you had Nick Westbrook Akina at five. Depending on how many receivers they get, you got Kyrus Jack, both the Jackson two. If they continue to do what they're doing on special teams, you got to find a spot for them. So that's what, seven receivers right there. Yeah. He and Kyle Phillips may just be out because of numbers.
Yes.
Not necessarily what he's doing, because I think Mason Kinsey is having a heck of a training camp. But it may just be because of numbers. You know, because he doesn't double as a returner. Now, I'm sure they're going to get him a shot to be a returner. If he can sort of explode as a returner too, then I can't see you not keeping him on the roster.
Well, what was the one thing that made Kyle Phillips stand out for all the wrong reasons in his time with the Titans? Not being able to field
catch a punt.
Punts. Mm-hmm. I saw video footage of him muffing punts in warm-ups before the game. Mm. So that might spell the end of Kyle Phillips, perhaps.
Yeah, he's another guy. I can't see him making the roster now. Listen, we got two more games and in practice with Seattle this week, they do. So you never know what can happen. But, you know, to start it off, I think Mason Kinsey is in the driver's seat as far as that, you know, we're talking that fifth, that sixth and seventh wide receiver spot if they do keep seven guys.
615-737-1025, our phone and text line driven by Wilson County Hyundai.com. We'll continue to take your thoughts. We encourage your participation. What your thoughts were on the Titans preseason win against the San Francisco 49ers over the weekend. And I missed this when we were having the conversation earlier to start the show. But Coy in Clarksville says, I can see D-Mace breakdancing to Ice Ice Baby. We were talking about D-Mace. If he can't get into the flag football competition, he's going to try his hand at breakdancing. Would that exactly. Would that be your song?
Yeah, be one of them. But then, you know, if y'all know about breakdancing, go back and watch Beat Street.
Okay.
Or
Stomp the Yard.
Not Stomp the Yard. Stomp the Yard was more of crunk dancing.
That was more step, right?
Yeah,
that was more step than
crunk
break
dance and then breakdance. You're talking about Beat Street. What was the breaking? Breaking is the real one you need to go watch.
Yes.
But yeah, that's if you watch breaking, then that's me.
Quickly, Wes in Clarksville texts in, why is Treylon Burks still in front of some of these other guys? These other guys have been playing better than Burks.
And listen, I am not going to sit here and because you're right, because if you look at what Mason Kinsey has been doing, he's been playing very well in camp. But here's the problem. Treylon Burks was a former first-round draft pick. First-round draft picks get any and every opportunity to make the
team.
They
are afforded a much longer runway than people, other players.
Absolutely. And the ability to play the game. He has more upside than Mason Kinsey, but that doesn't take away from Mason Kinsey what he's been able to do. It's just a sure numbers game. And if Mason was a draft pick, a second or third-round draft pick, depending on what he's doing now, yeah, I would say he is on a team. But Burks is a former first-round draft pick, so he's going to get, you know, more opportunities to make the team than not.
615-737-1025. Coming up next, we're going to talk about an aspect of the Titans preseason game that has absolutely nothing to do with what happened on the field. We'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Adam Vingan, in for Willie Donick, Derek Mason, ESPN 102.5, 106.3 The Game.